Hi, Arts Supply Posse. Today's guest joins the posse after a recommendation from our past guest, Sean Sutherland Kirby, better known, of course, as Uncle Frogface. When I began looking through her work, I knew she'd be a great fit for the posse. Our guest, Chantel Wilson, is an artist and a YouTuber who focuses on Harry Potter-themed work. She's also an avid journaler and has another YouTube channel where she shares her journal pages that, honestly, they are to die for. And I wish I had the patience to do that kind of work, but listeners, you know I don't, so I'll just admire someone else who does it. Hi, Chantel. Welcome to the Art Supply Posse.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, that's my pleasure. So, honestly, I have so many questions. I just find myself, like, my brain is just exploding when I think about everything I need to know. So I guess the first thing would be, why the Harry Potter universe as your focus?
All right. When I grew up, I was basically the same age as Harry was in the movies. I was, I think, 12 when he was 11. But yeah. I never picked up a book, a Harry Potter book, until I was in my 20s. So that's an interesting thing to start with already. Like, I didn't really grow up with Harry Potter, but I did because it came out the same time as, you know, it came out when I was actually that same age. But I didn't pick it up until later. But my love for Harry Potter basically started when I made my very first miniature. And that was in 2019. That was also the start of my YouTube channel. And I thought, I'll just make a cabinet, a miniature cabinet out of popsicle sticks, because I thought that was a cool thing to do at the time. And then I thought, why not put it in a room? So that's where my first miniature basically came to be. And it kind of spiraled on from there onward. So yeah, that's basically there.
So do you know, like, was there a reason why you didn't pick up the books when they were at their, like, you know, when they were being released, when it was all happening? Because, like, if I think back to that time, so I'm a little bit older, but I have two younger brothers, one of which is actually 8 years younger than me. So whilst when I were coming out, he was too young, technically, it was all there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just the zeitgeist was everything Harry Potter. Like, everybody was just clamoring for the books and for information and, you know, those sorts of things. So was there a reason why you didn't? Like, you just didn't read books, or you just weren't interested? Like, why were you the one person not doing what everyone else was doing?
Yeah, I was a different person then. I went through quite a difficult time, I suppose, because when I was 12 or 13, my parents divorced. And I was still in the Netherlands. So I was born and raised in the Netherlands, and I came to Australia in 2010. So that's 15 years now I've been in Australia. And at the time, my parents were divorcing. And the reason of me now being in Australia is because my dad immigrated to Australia when I was 14. So I think that time in my life, I just did not care for anything other than looking after myself and school, and that was basically it.
You do what you have to do to cope, to survive.
Yeah,
if that means
exactly.
If that means, like, just focus on yourself only, then that's what works for you. And it's interesting because some people do the other, like, they don't do the work that they need on themselves, and they're not doing that on purpose. Like, if anyone's, I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying you're not doing the work on yourself on purpose. You rarely ever are aware of it, especially at that age. But, you know, like, you can do it in one way. You can just focus on yourself and sort of, like, quite literally surviving, because especially when you're at that age, it feels like your whole world is coming crashing down, I would imagine.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, or you can fall into another world, which people often do, like with books or movies. You know, it gives you that escapism from reality, I guess.
And that's a great outlet as well. I just don't think that books were a part of my life back then. Yeah. And I, to be honest, I don't know why. I do remember that just before, like a year before that, me and my parents moved to another city. I had to go to a different school and all that stuff as well. And then my parents divorced not long after that, about a year after that. And then I had to move back. So I had to finish my school there, go to a different school again. And yeah, it was all a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
We crawled out of that though. My dad now lives in Australia. My mom still lives in the Netherlands. But yeah, it's, I suppose books were just not a part of my life back then.
Yeah. So, okay, you were in your 20s when you picked them up. And yeah. Do you remember what it first felt like once you first began to I assume you started at the first book. You might say, no, Kim, I actually didn't. But I know there are people that do that. But, like, what was that feeling when you first began to read it and began to, I guess, discover your love for it? Because I'm always interested. I'm a huge book reader, always, like I always have been. And I love hearing from other people about their book or books, if it's a series that really spoke to them in some kind of way or just made them, you know, realize that the books do hold an entire world within their pages, whether it's, you know, whether it's fantasy or whether it's, you know, horror or romance or whatever. Like, do you remember what that felt like?
Not quite what it felt like, but I do remember devouring the books. I bought the Harry Potter adult edition box set on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time it was $80 Australian. And I think that was a pretty decent price. And all the spines up to the fifth are absolutely cracked because I'm a spine cracker. Come at me. I crack spines. That's people what I do. My husband absolutely hates it when I do that. But I've read the book and it's lifting. Look, I've read it. And then from the fifth book onward, I switch on to the audio, not the audiobooks, the digital books on Kindle. Oh, yeah. I had a Kindle back then. I don't have my Kindle anymore. But yeah, you can definitely see which ones are read in book form and which ones are not. And my favorite book and my favorite movie is still number 5, The Order of the Phoenix. And people will probably fight me about that because it is most people's least favorite. And my least favorite is actually The Goblet of Fire. I just don't like it. I don't know. I don't know why. Yeah. I think the difference between light and dark is very, very there in book 5. It's very noticeable where Harry, actually the trio, go from that lighter first 4 years into the darker against the dark arts kind of situation. But yeah, I remember reading them on the train to Perth when I was still working in Perth and had a desk job.
Wow. It's funny because you're talking about the books and it's occurred to me that I can't recall the last time I read them. I think I've read them all through once. I may have reread one or two, the first couple. But see, I've got a pile of books and this is going to be a don't come at me either thing, people. I've got books that I'm going to give away because I'm trying to keep the books that I really, really, really want for one reason or another. And the rest, I'm like, I think they should be rehomed because I'm not going to read them again. And to be honest, they're taking up space that I could fill with other books. Like, you know, I'm going to put my hand up to that. But I'm thinking now maybe I should get the Harry Potters out of that collection and reread them before I do that because I'm sure it's been so long. I'm sure there's just so much I've forgotten about them. And it's so funny that, isn't it? Like,
there is so much information. So much information more in the books. And I'm looking at it now because it's right behind me. There's like these sets of books from Harry Potter, the Harry Potter universe. There is the character vault, the artifact vault, the creature vault, magical places. Oh, yes. And there's a few wizarding almanac, and there is a Mina Lima art book and books like that. I have them sitting on my shelf as well, and I have to reread the books every other year or so, which I'm now in the process of. I've just read book four, 1 to 4 in the last few months. And I kind of have to, because if I want to live and breathe Harry Potter for my YouTube channel, Raven's Minis, I have to keep myself informed of what is happening in the books versus the movies as well. Mm-hmm. Not so much Pottermore, but the other Harry Potter wiki page that exists on the internet is a very, very good source for me to get information from for the voiceovers for my videos. I get most of my information from those sites. And people like it when I put little tidbits of information on the movies and the books in my voiceovers, because they think, and they say in the comments as well, oh, I had kind of forgotten about that little moment in the movie versus the book kind of thing. And it's kind of nice to revisit that as well for myself.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I noticed that myself. Like, I've watched a handful of your videos, and a couple of times I thought, oh, I'd either completely forgotten that piece of information, or I'd skimmed over and it hadn't, because this is the one thing about reading, I guess, and just like life in general, is so much happens and you do forget stuff, and I don't know about you, but I'd have my favorite author is Stephen King. I will reread his books. I haven't reread the entire catalog, but I've reread a good half of it at least. And I will find myself sometimes picking up a book and rereading it and thinking, how did I forget about that? Like, you just do. But then it also, it's funny how it feels familiar in a good way, though. Like, it's, I don't know if it's like returning to a friendship or...
It's almost like rewatching an old TV series that you've loved and then rewatch it again. And you think, oh, yeah, I remember that happening.
Yeah.
That was a good scene.
Yeah. I love books. There's just something so magical about them. I guess the other thing too with you rereading them, and also I guess rewatching the movies, is doing that does mean that you're not having to rely on your memory, because we forget things, or how often Very is true. It we think one thing happened, but in actual fact, when you reread it, you're like, oh, I remember that wrong.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's especially when you do a channel on only one subject, people are very passionate about the lore and the books and the characters. And if you get something wrong, they will tell me about it. They will tell me about it.
Yeah, of course. So currently, your series is, or on your YouTube, your series is centered around the beautiful miniatures that you're creating. Matchbox is the term you've mentioned, so I will run with that, but please correct me if I'm wrong, because they're far more than just that. Like, they're just the most intricate miniatures I've ever seen. Like, it's just, I will confess, I probably should confess this to you, but also to the listeners. So my experience of miniatures is very, very limited. And it comes from a time years ago when I used to make teddy bears using, mohair fabric and doing all that. So the world was intertwined with doll making, because that's kind of how it went. And along with that was miniatures, miniature dolls and stuff. So my experience is very limited of it. And I've got to confess to not liking that side of it, like the doll making / doll world miniature stuff. It just did not speak to me at all. Like, it just didn't enjoy it. Whereas coming and looking at your work has just blown my mind, because, like, I know that miniatures exist outside of that world that I am familiar with, but when you're not involved in it, when you don't look at it on the day-to-day, it sort of can be, it's quite surprising. So I just wanted to get that out there so people, like, understand where I'm coming from, because I might sound crazy at being so excited by this. I don't know. It's quite possible. I mean, at the end of the day, it's art and I love it all. So, but how did you sort of decide on this concept of this collection of buildings that are the world of Harry Potter within like the buildings of Harry Potter, I guess. Like, how did you make that decision? Was it a conscious decision even to sort of go there?
Well, you're talking about the matchboxes purely now, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was interesting. I was standing in the kitchen and I said to my husband, what if I make a miniature or a Harry Potter scene from the movie or something in a matchbox? And then I said, like, not even a minute later, hold on, what if I make 50? And
way to challenge yourself. Great.
Yeah, that was in 2020. It's now 2025 and I'm nearly finished. So, yeah, there were times that I thought I'm going to stop now because I've had enough. Mm-hmm. But I kept going and we're nearly done. And I'm kind of proud of myself for that. I have a box full of matchboxes and I think it's just fun to create a teeny tiny little scene from a movie everyone loves that you can hold in your hand. It's kind of magical in its own way. And it's interesting how my brain works and coming up with these ideas every time because I don't always go in with a plan. The latest one that's coming up this week, which, a spoiler alert, is the second task of the Triwizard Tournament, took me maybe half a day to make. But then there's, for example, the Gringotts Bank with a dragon on top in a matchbox form. It's that tiny. That took me about a week to make. So it just depends on what my brain decides to do, I suppose, in that regard. There's only three left and I have to, well, I don't have to, but people want me to come up with another series that they can perhaps follow along with. So I'm trying to figure out what I can do in that space, perhaps something with the books that we can see in the Harry Potter universe, like the Monster Book of Monsters and those kind of things, Unfogging the Future from Trelawney's classroom, those kind of books. But yeah, I still have to figure that out. But the scale is about 140th. Yeah, about that.
That's amazing.
It's very tiny.
Like when you say it, it just is like, no. So where are they sitting at the moment? Like, do you have are they displayed on a shelf? Are they, I don't know, somewhere all together?
I'm trying to figure out a nice way to display them. So what I've started doing is make boxes that surround the certain match boxes, and I want to put a little plaque at the front to say what they all are, and then I can kind of piece them together and hang them on my wall as like a big display piece. But that is a kind of a side hustle project that I do in my downtime, which I don't really have much of. But yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to kind of make the boxes so the match boxes can sit inside those boxes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned in 2019 that was the first time, I guess, that you began this miniature world love.
Yes.
Passion. Why miniatures? Was there a specific reason why you sort of felt drawn to something small as opposed to something on a grander scale or just a, you know, a normal average old sort of scale?
Well, miniatures opposed to larger scale are just easier to store. Let's be fair, we don't all have the space in our homes unless I hang it from the ceiling. But there's just something magical about miniatures. And I started that first miniature room and I thought, I like this. I kind of want to make more of it. And I did.
Yeah.
So that's, it all started with that little popsicle cabinet, really.
So how did you go about learning all of the various things? Because watching you work, I'm just like, how did you know to do that? Like, the thing that I understand that was to me a no-brainer was using the fabric samples from upholsterers as like carpet. That, I've been there, done that sort of thing before. I specifically ordered samples to use for crafty things. But how do you work all those things out? Like, have you sat down and learnt from someone online? Have you taken classes, or have you just figured it all out?
I am a very good copycat, so I tend not to watch other people work, and that sounds a bit weird. But if I see someone do something that I really like, mm-hmm. I want to do that too, and then I might just replicate someone's work without actually noticing that I'm doing that. So I tend not to watch other people work just because of that, because of, you know, IP and copyright, that kind of thing, which is basically what I'm doing with the Harry Potter universe. But they allow it, so that's okay. if I go, for example, I'm looking at my Alice in Wonderland miniature that I made quite some time ago now. I made mushrooms out of tin foil. What else was there? Painter's tape, tissue paper, glue, and paint. And they're still standing up. They're still like I made them yesterday. And I know this technique has been used by many, many people and many crafters, but the fact that it just works for absolutely everything that you want to build is just magic. And I don't know who came up with that idea. I have no idea. But I think if you think about it logically and you have to find stuff that you need to use around the house because you have limited funds, for example,
mm-hmm.
Funds are not always easy to come by. And also craft supplies are not always easy to come by. Mm. You make do with what you've got. And everyone's got tin foil. Everyone's got painter's tape, either lying around or easily accessible at the shops. And that's how my channel kind of started. I started with building Dumbledore's office out of diaper boxes because my daughter was 2 at the time, I think. She's nearly 7 now, but and well and truly out of diapers. But yeah, we had all this cardboard lying around, and why not do something with it? It's a free art supply. You know, the only thing you need is some hot glue. And I used a lot of egg cartons as well, because that's the bricks that I use on the inside. Egg cartons, cardboard, that kind of thing. Tissue paper, glue. That's all you really need to start crafting. Yeah, and I think because that makes it so accessible, that's how people found my channel accessible as well. And I've moved on from most of those crafts right now. I still use them so here and again, but now and again. But I have a laser cutter now. I make money by selling my laser cut templates on Etsy, and that is basically what keeps me going. So yeah,
it's a nice progression. But it still shows that you can start from essentially nothing, and
absolutely.
You know, because if you want to have a go at something, you certainly can, and you don't need the most expensive, fanciest, you know, items.
You really don't. It's same for filming equipment. I started filming on my iPhone, on an old iPhone, and editing with a free editing program called iMovie on my then iPad or how do you call that? Laptop, my Apple laptop.
MacBook, yeah.
MacBook, that one. Yeah. I'm all into Android right now, so, and Windows, so. So yeah, that's what I started with. And it was a simple a phone holder from Amazon or something like that, that was wobbly as all get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a few desk lamps, no ring lights or anything like that, nothing fancy. That's what I started with. It was free, it was accessible, and that's how I started in 2019. And now I've got a whole rigging system and whatever, a new camera on the way because this one is getting old now. It's 8 years. So yeah, it's just start. If people want to take anything from this, just start.
So what would be the strangest thing you've repurposed to create something within your miniatures?
The strangest thing?
Mm-hmm. Like the most unusual thing that you've turned into something else completely.
Yeah. I did see this on someone else do this. The memory vials that I used for Dumbledore's office, they are made from Christmas lights. Do you know
Wow.
The glass Christmas lights.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's the strangest thing. And I asked for those Christmas lights because I got them for free on a buy nothing page on Facebook. And I said, I need these glass Christmas lights for a craft project. And someone rocked up and dropped them off at my door and said, there you go.
Wow.
Great.
Wow. Yeah. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I guess that's another thing, I suppose, that I certainly don't think of. But, you know, when we're talking about just getting started, if you don't have that right thing or that thing you want, why not ask? Like, why not go into these kind of groups? There's plenty of them around. Like, you can find them outside of Facebook as well. But, like, go in, see what people have to offer, or just ask. And the worst thing will happen is that no one will have whatever you're looking for, which is okay. You haven't lost anything from that. But there could very well be people with a whole collection of things that they no longer want. And they cannot be bothered selling, because let's be honest, putting things on eBay to sell is painful. And even, you know, selling things on Facebook groups can be annoying, you know, because people don't turn up or they don't want to pay anything, you know, that whole thing. Whereas if you just ask within these free, you know, these groups where everything is for free, who knows what you'll come across.
Exactly. And the buy nothing groups are really great for that. There's also op shops. I think 90% of the stuff that's in my room is from op shops. Besides, obviously, the equipment that you have to buy new, or mostly new. But yeah, mostly is from op shops. My books, my craft supplies, except for the glue, obviously, because who sells glue in an op shop? But fabrics, those kind of things. You just look and find. I found a whole bunch of sewing thread the other day in a rainbow of colors for $4. You know, it doesn't have to be expensive. You just need to be lucky to find it, obviously. But there is stuff out there.
And I think the other thing, too, is learning to look differently at something. So, you know, you might see a piece of fabric that you think, well, that's not big enough for me to sew a outfit with, but it could be perfectly suitable for that next miniature project you want to take on. Like, it's looking at things in a slightly different way than what they were intended to be used for.
Yeah, I have downsized a lot, though. There's a lot of stuff to get rid of in the garage sale that I will put on later this year, because I used to buy everything and anything from the op shops because I thought, oh, that looks beautiful. Oh, that's pretty. But do I need 5 meters of a certain fabric? No, I probably just need 1 meter. But it's only $2 for those 5 meters. I'll just get it. I'll just cut off that little piece and then I'll sell the rest. I have to get rid of so many things. I've sized down quite a bit. As you know, I have 3 channels. I have my Ravens Minis for miniatures. Then I have my journaling one, Raven Compendium, and I have my doll channel, Dolls Unboxed. And the dolls take up a lot of space as well. But for the journaling, I've sized down tremendously. I just have one cart with my journaling right now because I'm not actually making journals anymore. But I am still journaling, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. So let's talk the journaling then. When did you first start journaling?
I always liked the art of making books. So when I started making junk journals from scratch, from absolutely nothing, paper bags, printer paper, old school books that you can find at thrift stores again, that are not used, you know, just ruled paper, things like that, or cheap lined notebooks that you can find at Officeworks or Kmart or whatever, stain them with tea, bind them in a book, and you have a beautiful vintage looking junk journal that you can use for all kinds of things. Record your daily things and make a calendar out of it or whatever you want, really. And my love for books has always been there. I have done a book binding and box making course at TAFE at some point. That was when I was still working in the city, and I used to go there one time a week from 6 till 9 at night. It was after work kind of thing. And I learned so much from just one bookbinding course. That's where my love for bookbinding started. And that's how I got into making junk journals. But then I got into making miniatures, and I cannot possibly do everything, obviously.
No, there's not enough time for that.
No, there's not. So the miniature channel took off. So I kind of wound down on the junk journal making component, but I still post videos. So now and again, I have a studio tour coming up very soon, hopefully, if I get everything together and actually start filming that, to walk around my revamped studio and show everyone how my storage system works, because people get inspired by that for some reason, to see what I've got stored in all the boxes that I have in my studio.
Well, yeah, so. It is. I do enjoy seeing other people's spaces, because it's not always like inspirational for me, but I find it, as in terms of how I would have my things, but I find it just, it's kind of like an insight into how people work and think, how they have their studio or their dining room table, if that's all they've got or whatever. Like, I find it is interesting seeing how people exist. So I, for one, I'm looking forward to that video.
That will be on the Raven Compendium channel. Yeah, that's basically where I dump everything else that doesn't fit on any of the other two channels. That's where that goes.
I love this, yeah. this managing of three channels. It's hilarious. I just feel like, how do you even get your brain around three different channels? But you're doing it, so obviously it works.
Yeah, sometimes it does. I'm a little bit behind on my my reading journal though. I need to catch up on that and probably post that video too. Yeah, what else have I got going on? Just the usual matchboxes, and I have a bigger video planned. Like I don't know if you have seen my Honeydukes video.
No, I haven't yet. Nope. Not yet.
That was quite a big project. And the Weasley kitchen for Christmas that I posted as well, that was a big project as well. And the next big one will be the Hogwarts greenhouse, one of the greenhouses that I will be making in 12th scale. So,
ooh, yeah. Wow. That will be fascinating.
Yeah.
So with your journals, is that, I guess, are you using them and not always filming for them? Like, is it just, do you have a journal that, say, let's say for example, is just a personal dumping of thoughts and just working out things in that you don't share, or is it all shared?
My current system, if that's basically what you're asking, right? What do you use on a daily basis? I don't actually use a junk journal. Funnily enough, my current journal that I note daily in, that I actually have here in front of me, is a Hobonichi, an A6. It's not even that big, but I had a Hobonichi A5 last year, and that was way too large for me. So on the daily pages that this has, I am writing down my daily, what have I done, what did I do, what special events happened on that day, what funny things did my daughter say, kind of thing. Then I have a, let me see, let me grab it, because I always forget what this, well, I don't really call this thing anything. it is a Moleskine 400-page notebook, and I've started writing a line a day per page. So January has, two lines per day. So January, the 1st of January, has two lines, and it can hold 10 years. So on the first page is only the 1st of January for 2025 up to 2034. That's a weird thing to say.
Isn't it just, so, yes, that's a weird thing to hear.
Yeah. So over the next 10 years, I'll be filling up this book with my daily, what did I do, kind of thing, in two lines. And then I also have a reading journal. So that's where I write down what I read in every month. And I put like the little book covers and a tiny little review of what I thought of the book, a star rating and that kind of thing. And that's just a little hobby for myself. I will post those on the book journal thing on my YouTube. My Hobonichi is basically only for me because it can be quite personal as well. Yes. And my 10-year is not quite as in-depth as my Hobonichi daily. So at some point, I will probably do a flip through whenever I'm a couple of years in. But 10 years is a long time to record something. So I've started and it will be on its way. But yeah, it takes a little bit of time to get that all populated, obviously. But yeah, that's my daily system and my work kind of thing for my channels. I use Notion. And mm-hmm. in Notion, I have a list of projects, and the list of projects is spread out over all three of the channels. And then if I scroll down in that first Notion page, I can drag and drop where I want things to be. And then I can see, like, in one go, what do I need to do today? What do I need to do tomorrow? And that kind of thing. What appointments have I got lined up? And yeah. Nice. So that's basically how I work.
That's a good little system. So within the pages, the book journal, I noticed you're using a variety of different things. So we have stickers and we have, you know, different. What do you have a preference? Is there favorite brands of paints to use, favorite stickers? Because it's an interesting world to dive into and sort of start looking around and learning what is a supply that not only might be the right quality for what you want, but also just kind of feels like an extension of yourself, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So for my dot grid journal, because this is a dot grid journal that I'm using, this one is from Tifosi, and you can get them for cheaper as well on AliExpress and all that. So, but don't tell anyone that because it's a big secret. Anyway, it's a dot grid journal, and I think it's 180 GSM per page, so it can hold up quite a bit. It's not quite watercolor paper, but I have used fountain pen in it, so that will hold up quite nicely. It does not bleed through. For the stickers, I get my book cover stickers from Goodreads. They are just the best quality versus I use Storygraph to record my books that I read and how long it took me to read them and all that kind of stuff. And Storygraph is for that. And then Goodreads is for just the book, grabbing the book covers. And I just pop them in Photoshop and then size them down and print them on sticker paper. So that's what I do with those. Then I have bought a big set of graphics from an Etsy store, and I just go through all the things that I need or want and print them on sticker paper as well. And then I have my own stickers from that kind of go with the books. And then scrapbook paper for backgrounds, paper bags for backgrounds, washi tapes for borders, other washi stickers that I got from Temu and AliExpress. I am not afraid to buy from those sites. Everyone does it. It's actually quite good for art supplies. I have recently signed up with something called Sticky with a double I at the end. And they make stickers in-house with artists that they invite to make stickers for them. So it's not AI generated. It's all by actual artists. And you can sign up for their vintage, cute, or pop packs. I have signed up for their vintage pack because that kind of joins in more with what I want the aesthetics to be of my reading journal. And every month they have a new theme. And then they send out a little pack of 6 or 7 sticker sheets with a little folder that you can actually put in a keepsake folder. So yeah, that's a kind of nice little thing to support local artists or small artists as well. So yeah, that. And then just drawing with pens and fineliners. And I recently found that Officeworks sells markers that look like Tombow markers. They are called Born, B-O-R-N, and they are absolutely great for journaling and that kind of stuff. They are a fraction of the price from Tombow's. So
nice. Well, that's a good one.
Yes. So they sell a six pack for $15. And if you have to buy a six pack from Tombow, you pay $30. Mm, so it's about double the price.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, just a variety of pens. I like using my fountain pens for writing. So
fantastic. Yeah. It's a nice little collection. I think like all of my questions have been answered. Everything in my head. I'm really happy. I'm inspired as well. And I do hope the listeners are as well. I guess probably the best way to end our conversation is share with everybody the best places they can find you. Give them your YouTube channels and anywhere else you might be online too.
Yeah. So my main YouTube channel is Raven's Minis. I am also on Instagram under the same handle. Raven Compendium is the same handle on YouTube and Instagram as well. It's a bit more sporadic in posting, but it's still there. And then there's Dolls on Box, where I do doll makeovers of mainly Monster High dolls. And that is Dolls Unboxed on YouTube and Instagram as well.
Fantastic. Awesome. Mm. Thank you so much, Chantel, for making the time. I really, so really appreciate it. Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you. That was such a good conversation.
Would you be interested in making a one-off payment to support us? In return, you'd be helping to keep the podcast going and would also get access to our bonus episodes. Let me know what you think via Kim at artsupplyposse.com or via Instagram.